I really think the acceleration and in the noise and the speed of change in marketing is an absolute massive battle cry for a return to humanity, even in our one-click marketing, because it's still a human clicking that and being curious about that and being triggered by that and trying to solve a problem or trying to create progress. And marketing communication should represent progress for the recipient of our messages. And that's exciting. Like, that is really exciting to be the arbiter of somebody that is progressing other people's success. And that's what we've got to get back to.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, we're going to have a great discussion today because I have Dacia Coffee on the show with me today, who's the author of Corporate Caffeine. And if you don't get a jolt from this, you know, we can't help you. That's for darn sure. So she wrote Corporate Caffeine, and it says boosting B2B growth through sales and marketing alignment, which we hear a lot about, you know, in the marketplace. But you're going to get a very interesting look into what that actually means through our conversation. And before we actually get into that, Dacia, if you could please share a little bit about your background and experience with the B2B DM game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my company, The Marketing Blender, we accelerate revenue growth for companies in complicated selling environments. So we're the B2B folk. So I really love that. And the way that I came to this was I cut my teeth early on in sales. I sold commercial power tools on high rises in Atlanta. I was in pharmaceutical. I have been a fundraiser in nonprofit. And then my husband and I owned a trucking company for almost a decade in oil and gas. And at the time, it felt like this very winding road where I'm like, what kind of career path is this? Just stringing together all these really disparate parts. But eventually, we decided to sell the oil and gas trucking company because it was not aligned with our priorities and our values. And when we did, I made a leap back out of entrepreneur land back into corporate America and found myself at a marketing agency. And I attracted business-to-business clients. Now, it was because that was familiar to me, and that's where I sold. But everybody in agency land was thinking and saying to me, literally, you're the weirdest marketer we've ever met. Like, who lands manufacturers and software companies and cybersecurity people? And I'm like, I do. And eventually I started realizing there is this amazing world out there where they are the backbone of our lifestyle and what they do. And I understand what it's like to sell in that environment and that marketing should help them sell more. But that was not the paradigm at the time when I launched The Marketing Blender. And so we launched in order to fill what I saw as a need and a gap. And then on top of that, your audience knows this, digital marketing has dramatically broken the traditional sales model for B2B companies. And it's been happening silently but swiftly for at least 15 years. And people are catching up really, really late to the game. And so, you know, I was another piece where I was like, people need to know that the rules have changed and they've got to learn the new rules of the game so they can win. And yeah, so that's the short, long version of my background.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And with that, and you know, so for me, as I say to people that, you know, I was a sales guy that was forced, you know, into doing digital marketing, you know, 18, 19 years ago.
Yes.
The lady who I was working for, who owned our boutique research firm, measuring the customer experience, told me after I came on board, worked through my network, grew the business, you know, triple digit type scenario. I said, okay, time for the next phase. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, I said, if we've worked through my network, we have to start doing a few other things in order to start filling my sales pipeline. And she stopped for a second. She said, I'm paying your salary, fill your own sales pipeline. I was like, what?
Yes.
Now, the problem, yes. where that existed and where it originated is she had never worked for anyone, never. So she received a PhD in consumer science and statistics, was one a project. How that happened, I don't know. Well, we didn't even get into that. With Bank of America at the time.
Wow.
And that lost her business.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so she had no context of what we were talking about in regards to sales and marketing and pipelines and
pipeline. Yeah.
And personas. And I mean, I was like, so I had a choice at that time. Because at that time, this was many, many, many years ago, my wife and I started having kids and I knew what my alternative was, being in sales. I'd be gone all the time. And I had worked it out with her where I only had to travel in the spring and in the fall. She was good with that. I was home during the summer. I was home during the holidays. I'm like, I need to try to make this work. And so then I started looking at what was everybody doing? And you are exactly right when you start talking about how things have changed quite significantly. So I started using a lot of the things that were actually occurring digitally that was happening in the B2C world. Just, converted it and started using it in B2B. And man, that worked. We're like, that was just awesome, right? It worked great. Then I started seeing this decline.
Yeah.
All right. And then COVID hit and then just, decimated, and we're going to talk about a little of that in a second. When you start looking at the sheer noise that exists today and all of the push button marketing that exists. Yes. I mean, it's like, there's some massive problems here. So I think it's good for us to probably launch from what your definition of marketing is, knowing how you just talked about your background and even my background. It was really sales. And now it's like, okay, how do we actually, do the marketing side of it as well? What is your definition of marketing? What is marketing?
I love it. So it's funny, in the book, this one sentence took me so long to write because there's no marketing dictionary that everyone agrees upon. And especially if you're thinking about it from a B2B perspective, not a business to consumer perspective, that really does change the game. So for me, my definition of marketing is to evoke desire, which is kind of a weird word in business to business, and also to remove fear inside of a buying decision that leads to a sale. And so all three of those pieces are really important. But that first part is about there is a human on the other side of that business decision. And that human is representing other humans in very complicated scenarios. And then it has to lead to a sale. Marketing has got to be reverse engineered into the very few key metrics, sales metrics that matter. And I know I'm preaching to the choir on, to your folks, but that brokenness between an MQL and an SQL, I lecture CEOs and leadership teams all the time that they're setting people up for failure by not creating the communication link and a communication bridge between them and their teams. So I'm getting a little bit ahead, but I really think the acceleration and in the noise and the speed of change in marketing is an absolute massive battle cry for a return to humanity. Even in our one-click marketing, because it's still a human clicking that and being curious about that and being triggered by that and trying to solve a problem or trying to create progress. And marketing communication should represent progress for the recipient of our messages. And that's exciting. Like, that is really exciting to be the arbiter of somebody that is progressing other people's success. And that's what we've got to get back to.
Well, when you say that, and there's some things that you cover in the book, for me, it's kind of like, well, how does that fit? And we'll get into that in a second. But there was something that came out by Harvard Business Review that stated that growth and marketing strategies need significant changes, if not a complete overhaul. What does that mean to you when you hear that?
So I will tell you, there's a couple of really dangerous things in selling or total business development systems that were really effective 1 and 2 decades ago that are very dangerous now. So consultative selling is one of those. Now, I don't disagree with the heart of that. Of course, you want to be a consultant, a solution provider to your prospective customer. However, how that is taught is in this slow, deliberate question orientation. And guess what? Nowadays, that Q&A is happening in digital marketing. And the buyer has complete control over their discovery process. And that includes complete control and, unfortunately, being knocked off center because of their blind spots. So they are asking the questions that they know to ask, right? Like, they are looking for things and they're being guided down their discovery, their progress towards what are all of my solutions? What are my solution providers now? What do I believe that they bring to the table? And so that is a really, really important one. And then two other quick things. We talk about the buyer's journey, and it sounds like this really calm, deliberate progress, but they are hopping back and forth from testimonials and referrals and sales conversations and trade shows and ads and retargeting, and half of it, they're not even aware of the impact that it's making on them. So the buyer's journey is chaotic. And so we've got to learn as marketers and sellers in a unified business development approach how to truly be a guide with high integrity to make their buying decisions more effective. Because here's the other symptom that's really happened. The number one competitor of B2B sellers now on the marketing and sales side is their customer. And it's because they're so distracted and they will get overwhelmed in the buying cycle and the buyer's journey. Most sales are lost to no decision. No decision. If you simply fix your no decision decisions, holy cow, talk about accelerating revenue, and it's the lowest lying fruit. But therein lies the break in humanity in the digital marketing as well as the selling process. And so those are examples of why we need a complete overhaul of what's happening, because what we were taught, we no longer have the margin, the time margin to actually engage in those type of processes, not in marketing and not in sales. And so it calls for something very, very different to serve people well.
Well, as you're saying that, I'm starting to look and think about, you know, how everybody is trying to approach that in the practice, so say the practical applications. And I was, so for myself, I've been, actually facilitating peer roundtables with sales and revenue generation leaders for the past couple of years at peerroundtables.com. And I hear the same seven things over and again in regards to what they're struggling with and what their challenges are. And so as you're talking about that, I start thinking of their approaches because of those. Just to put it in context. Seven things keep coming up as recurring problems. And then the solutions are the seven same, you know, things that are being addressed for those, which are perpetuating those seven problems. So, and I think kind of you hit it on a second ago is if I look at, for example, how most or a lot of organizations go about educating and doing and engaging, just say, you know, blogs, right? Whether you blog or whatever.
Right.
Now have more blogs on the planet than we do people. There's something very flawed if that's your approach.
Right. I love it. You're so right.
And so, so somebody said to me, when we actually were talking about some counterintuitive thinking and approaches, a sales leader stopped and said, he goes, "So you mean we have to stop banging our head?" I'm like, yeah. So I have to ask you the question, and I think you kind of gave us a lead into that, but you know, why are B2B, you know, marketers and sellers banging their heads?
Honestly, I think it's because we are collectively buried under the curse of knowledge. So people have gotten to this point in their careers and in their businesses where they have built a significant amount of specialization and expertise, because we are not in the shallow end of the pool if you are selling a business-to-business product or service. And you cannot remember what it was like to not know how to understand your product and service. And so the number one, it all distills down into one sentence, which is, it's not about you. And so I'll give you an example. Specialization is wildly misunderstood. Everyone thinks that they can command a premium because they are specialists, meaning they are better, faster, cheaper, more innovative than their competitors. No, 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 no. That is table stakes. If you're one of the best, that's why you got invited to the table. And maybe you're the one that they like the best, or maybe you're the one that's pulling down the price for the one they want to actually hire. But those are table stakes. It is literally the only reason you got invited is because of your expertise. So if everybody at the table are experts, what's real specialization if the customer, who is the one that defines value, doesn't care? Well, real specialization is specializing in the human that's making that decision. I talk a lot about choreography. So for instance, if you in your marketing have a language that understands and literally feels like you are reading their mind. So your peer roundtables are a perfect example where you're paying such good attention to the people that you serve, seven problems show up predictably over and over and over. And you could, in your sleep, talk about the emotion and the frustration and what it's preventing them and the potential that it's killing, like the heart of why these are so deadly to that person. If you specialize and your marketing sounds and feels like that, where they're thinking, are they in my head? They go, they get me, right? And so then it's very easy to be curious about what you're going to say next and to take that education, that progress that you that you're providing them seriously and really take it to heart. And it does end up leading to confirmation bias. So I really believe that one of those paradigm shifts is specialization, the one that allows you to have more profit, better branding, right? Like where you're the premium, you're the bar setter in your industry. It's not being the best at your product or offering. It is about being the best at understanding and loving in action your target market, because nobody can touch you if you take the time to do that. So I get really excited about that, if you can't tell. But I also think it goes straight back to, you know, what's happening out there.
Okay. Now, with what you just explained, that's where, for me, I'm like, okay, the wires are not connecting.
Yeah.
When you say that the traditional consultative selling approach is no longer scalable, because for me, I think you just explained that you need to have it.
So I think that's the word traditional, right? So people think they have to go through a Q&A process. They think they have to be face-to-face. They think it has to look a certain way. What I believe is that marketing, well, not believe, what I know and all of our, you know, your audience knows, is that marketing now has to take a leadership role, a predictive role, where you say, I don't need the answers. I already have them. And I can build those into my answers, and I can accelerate past that Q&A phase, because then it sounds like I'm just validating and letting a buyer self-select. Yeah, that's my problem. And so they are able to quickly and rapidly go down the path that they need to go, because you're paving that path with understanding and clarification and all the work that you've done to understand where they're at. And so it's assumptive. In consultative selling is you let them say, and you make them validate out loud to you. But what I'm saying is marketing has to do the work to pave that path and predictively and preemptively put those tools out there, pay attention to the data, and then create a scenario where by the time that they get in front of a sales rep, everybody's starting in the middle or at the end of the conversation. So it is very assumptive. And so it's probably an evolution of what we've been taught, but people are skipping that. Like, they don't know how to deliver it in a new way. And I think that's the key.
Okay. And the other thing, as you're talking about that, I started thinking about what you had referred to a moment ago. And we've seen all the statistics where, you know, a buyer has done all this research, they have and it goes on and on and on, and, you know, they've, you know, and so therefore they're 80% down the decision-making path. And I mean, and so I think the pitfall is, especially when you start talking about social, is that, oh my gosh, they're going out and they're seeking all of this information, and therefore we need to put all of that stuff out there so that they find us.
Yes.
But here's the problem with that. The problem with that is, goes back to that curse of knowledge piece. We're assuming that they have our level of knowledge and understanding, and therefore if we're talking about our greatness.
Yes.
That they'll get it.
And yes. That is not the case. In my book, I outline a sales mapping process where marketers and sellers and leaders need to be in the same room talking about what actually happens in real life selling conversations and what are the hidden assumptions about the buyer's journey in their research process. And you know what's amazing is how lean the buyer's journeys actually are, because you're right, they don't want and they don't need all of this. In 9 years and hundreds of sales mapping workshops that I've led or watched my team lead, do you know how many times case studies have shown up in that? Zero. I have never seen a sales and marketing team ever say customer requested a case study, or they requested a case study in how we define a case study. And then you see that leadership team's jaws just drop because they have spent time and money on 250 of them, and they never even bothered to check the website traffic that none of them have been looked at. Right? You know, I mean, I love that statistic about the blogs, but that's such a perfect example. So removing friction and truly understanding what busy buyers need to make a purchase decision, it is shockingly less than we think. And it has to be 100% aligned with how they define value. Do you mind if I give you like one weird example before we move on to the next question? Because I think you'll have fun with this one.
I love weird. Go right in.
Okay. So for software companies, as an example, what's the very first call to action that every software company out there, you know, especially SaaS-based companies have? Schedule a demo. Okay. When somebody, and you know, and a lot of times people will schedule that demo. And then the demo is typically anywhere between 30 minutes and an hour. Here's what's happening for that buyer though. They have zero context, and context means comparison. They cannot say, oh, I saw this demo over here and I understood everything I saw. And now I am seeing yours and I understand everything I see. And now I understand how red is different from green or left is different from right. They have no context. And so you know what people will see? And I see this in recorded calls all the time. They're going through a demo and the prospect is smiling and they're like, that's cool. And they're nodding and they're like, yeah. If you have a prospect nodding and smiling at you, that is death. You automatically already lost that damn sale. And it is because they're like, great. If I can nod a little faster, maybe they'll get me off this call a little faster because they will stop explaining. They're literally blank because you made zero progress for them. Now, a 30-second demo or a couple screenshots and some assumptive question behind the question, like what's really happening for you? What happens if you don't make a decision? How is your decision process? And you can build this into marketing, but restructuring what they're confused about. And then the demo is just enough to accelerate them and give them proof, like visual proof, like, oh, that looks good. Doesn't scare me. I'm good. Okay, now I have some better questions to ask. Game changer. And then put the big demos at the end where then they've got critical thinking. Total game changer. But sometimes just chopping a demo into three different pieces with very different goals and making sure you have the right people on the call for those. Game changer. Game changer.
Yeah, I refer to that as chunking.
Yes.
We have to. But see, that goes back into that pitfall. Hey, these people are looking. We need to put every single thing out there. And I'm like, no. No, don't do that. Here's the thing. I think we forget about the power of curiosity.
Yes. Amen.
Why do we have FOMO and all this type of stuff, right? Why do we have, teasers, on our local newscasts even? I mean, because the freaking curiosity is the draw. And so before, if I essentially put my naked pictures out there, right? Guess what? It's easier for them to say no.
Yes.
So it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's just, this is the counterintuitive thinking. And before we started recording, you asked me, you said, well, what are the listeners of the B2B, digital marketer podcast, what are they interested in? I said, counterintuitive thinking. It's like, we don't realize, we've been suckered into doing a lot of the things that we do. So let me give you an example. This actually came from LinkedIn. It said B2B brands are now producing so much content across social media that it can become very difficult for any of it to stand out or get noticed. And so all of this noise, another statistic related to that says that it has created an 18% decrease, and depending on how you look at this, in decision ease. So that means there's so much information out there, it's harder for me to make a decision, which feeds into what you were saying about the no decision. right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, but here's the thing. You might say, but why would LinkedIn say that? LinkedIn would say that because they want you to pay and buy ads.
Yes. Yes. You get a round of applause. It serves them well to say that. You know, and I would also challenge that for LinkedIn, they have so many B2B companies on there and they know the content is so boring, people won't stay. It won't stay. And so they need people to get better at this. Like, hello, do you want to know why Facebook is still somewhat relevant? Pains me to still say that out loud. But anyways, why? Because people can't get off. Because they get addicted to what they're seeing and saying. And I always want to say to B2B marketers and the bosses that are pushing down instructions and requests to the B2B digital marketers, is it follow worthy? Would you have a hard time pulling your eyes off of that? Is your headline so provocative that even if you know it's clickbait, you still got to see where it ends? If not, get going, you know, like do content that you could not help clicking on and paying attention to and stuff that makes you excited and proud. And it's not easy. It's not easy. But what if instead of pumping out hundreds and hundreds of posts, you pump out a quarter of that, but they're amazing, you know, and you can double down on paying attention to how those work.
Well, I mean, as you say that, there was also, I received an email a while back from LinkedIn, and it said, content creators, submit your opportunity to win a $15,000 grant on how to create content better on LinkedIn. Like what? I mean, again, why would they do that? You know, the reason that they would do that is because more people will stay on the platform and see the freaking ads.
That's right. That's right.
It's like, exactly. We don't understand, and talking about stopping and pulling back is that we don't do that to say, what's really going on here, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
And so therefore we get suckered down this particular path, you know, and our curse of knowledge and, you know, also connecting with the individual, understanding, you know, that people have a problem to solve. They don't give a squat about your brand or your features and benefits.
That's right. Don't care.
You know, put your pride in your pocket. I mean, we have to get real and understand this a little bit better. So here's the other thing. Studies show that depending on your product or service and your ideal customer profile and customer and client and target, is that it's anywhere from 1-7% are actually in market for your solution. Now, again, this also assuming they actually know what they're doing and looking for.
Exactly.
Extremely small number. We also have to look on the other side to say, you know, there's probably anywhere from, even of your ICP, you know, 10 to 15% that will never be your customer. Never. Just never. They're extreme laggards. They are what they are. And, you know, don't waste your freaking time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we start looking that in context and looking at it as far as a continuum, if you want to put statistical curves, but by the way, it's not a standard deviation in any way, shape or form.
Yes.
You know, you need to put yourself into context and say, what's best for us from a strategy perspective?
Amen.
I don't see anybody doing that.
I completely agree. People anchoring to their competitors and what other people are doing or what other people are saying, so absolutely insane. And, you know, people talk a lot about thought leadership. You know, it's sexy. Like the CEO wants us to be thought leaders. Like we want to be advocates. We want to be out there ahead of the market. But the interesting thing about thought leadership is that you're leading. It means you are not copycatting. You are not paying attention to your competition. You are leading the people that are following, because what's the definition of a leader? Somebody that follows, like somebody that has followers. It's that simple. It's not about what you're saying. And leadership is about giving people what they want or what they need. So that means you have to know where they're at. You have to know what they're paying attention to, and then you have to know what actually moves them forward, which is where counterintuitive thinking is so exciting and provocative and good for the psychology of decision-making. Because if you engage skepticism in a person, they're leaning in, they're paying attention to you, you know, and they're like, I don't know if I agree with that. That's awesome, because it means they're taking what you're saying so seriously. And so it is not about getting those nods and head bobs and yes, you're so great. No, No, you want people squinting when they're reading your content and being like, what do I think about that? That's excellent, because now they're really taking you seriously and you have penetrated that noise and they're now personalizing your point of view and deciding and putting you in a position map in their head around something that's already there. So profound. So thought leadership is so misunderstood, because the step one is to meet people where they are and serve up something that they want and then go, but what if you misunderstand, or what if you're asking for the wrong thing? Profound. That's progress.
Yeah. Well, you also described a unicorn. Because I mean, what I see a mass number of B2B firms doing is they push, you know, content development creation down to the lowest level, maybe even outsource it.
Oh yeah.
And their whole backwards thinking is, hey, well, we're going to get organic, you know, traffic. And so you read a lot of this stuff and you're like, that's crap. You know,
yeah. You
tell somebody with no depth of understanding or I don't even have to be in the industry. You know, it's like, there's no meat and depth here. There's none of that, you know, provocative, you know, thinking. There's none of that. And there's a multitude of reasons for that. But I think the biggest thing is really the conversion to quality versus, considering the whole content and quantity piece.
Yeah.
Give up the whole organic, you know, thinking. I mean,
yeah.
That is like a mega ultra marathon play. And you need to put that in its proper context.
Yes.
Then it's like, okay, I need to figure out a short term, a middle term, and a long term strategy in all this, and understand, you know, the pros and cons and consequences of all of it.
Yes.
And I'm a firm believer of, if you can't be good at it, don't even attempt it.
I could not agree more. If you cannot manage more than one platform in integrity, don't. Just don't. Pick the one, double down, be amazing. Social media is social. Why are we forgetting that? Where is the miss in that?
I have to sell stuff, man. I got numbers I need to meet.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. But yeah, I could not agree more. Gary Vee made me so mad. Well, he frequently does. But like a couple of years ago, where he was like, whatever you're doing, basically 10X. 10X the amount of content. You need to be everywhere. Everything. Just throw it out there. So I wish so bad I could go back and record. We actually decided to vet his idea. So for 1 month, we took our content and we took two or three of our clients' content and we turned on some AI and we added extra team members and we literally 10X the content for about 30 to 45 days, depending on, you know, who we were working with. You know how much impact it had?
Zero.
Zero. Now, flip that. A couple years later, we have, you know, returned to, because that was a total fail and we thought it would be, but we're like, no, we're going to go ahead. Like he's one of the biggest thought leaders out there. Like, let's test that. Nothing. So, but now like we have a couple of clients where they can't manage organizationally, internally, cannot manage what it takes to do the volume of content. So we've doubled down on one or two super brilliant pieces that were harvested from some sales conversations. One or two. And I'm not kidding. They are like the little engine that could. These pieces perform like nobody's business. Yes, we tied them to some smart SEO. Yes, we watched the data. Yes, we've iterated. But we did not create volumes and volumes of additional content. We just said, we know these serve the market. Now let's just figure out how to pique people's curiosity, how to improve our conversion on them, how to make them. And they work like magic. They're like my favorite things. They're so fun. And then they validate that they feel good to the client. And I'm like, yes, like that's a win for the marketers that built it and the people internally for our clients. I mean, it feels so good, but I could not agree more with what you're saying.
Well, and again, there's, what are we being told? I mean, here's what a lot of people don't realize. And much like when you start thinking about our political system, we all feel suckered in regards to our political system. Well, guess what? Digital marketing is exact same. Actually it's probably worse because it's global. So you have, you know, as I say, everybody and their mother trying to sell you the next, you know, thing in regards to marketing and selling and leads. Now I'm seeing, and I'm getting pounded you know, with requests where people will say, hey, we'll get you, you know, 15 leads all on a performance base. You don't pay anything. And I'm like, that's crap. Okay.
I know.
It's just crap. Okay. So, all right. Now, I want to play, you know, a little bomb drop with you. Okay.
Okay.
So we have 7 chapters in the book. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and read the titles of the book, the titles of the chapters. Thank you. And if you could, please give me like, what's a big nugget or two that stand out in regards to those particular chapter topics. All right.
Love it.
Chapter 1, a business development crossroads.
Sales and marketing alignment is what is required to aggressively scale and accelerate revenue, period, period. And we've got to get really serious about what that means because people don't even understand what it means. It could mean organizing your technology, clarifying the definition of a qualified lead or a marketing qualified lead, but it is about getting in the trenches of the people doing sales and marketing and making sure that they are in lockstep and no more sacred cows, no more sacred cows about what selling looks like, how things should be, how people should buy, whether you think you're better than the competition. Kill the sacred cows, let the humans talk internally and just get really laser focused on what progress actually is versus busyness.
The payoff of marketing and sales alignment.
So the number one thing I would say about this is there is an unbelievable number of leads and hidden revenue that you could harvest this quarter hidden in your business right now. Right now, if you know where to look, and if you are brave enough to have the right conversations. For example, oftentimes leadership teams will set marketers up for failure because they are incentivizing around profit, but then they say they want visibility, or they want attribution, but then they want thought leadership, or they want lead generation, but then they want something else. So that's one example. I know I'm throwing some leaders under the bus, but there's a lot of frustration in the marketing world because there's this underground piece that's really just not set us up for to be successful. So there is so much opportunity as long as you have the right conversations. And I do mean short term. I mean near term, turn the boat around, like figure it out, harvest stuff that you've already built because there's so many opportunities right in front of you. But we are so focused on the wrong things anymore.
Well, and let's look at the reality of the statistics. CMO tenure is dropping. We're only talking about, 16, 17 months?
Horrifying.
Yeah, as well as chief sales officers, tenure declining. I mean, it's in the same scenario. It's still under 2 years. And so it's like, okay, that's a freaking wake-up call. All right, buyer personas.
It's not about you. And ROI. You want return on investment around marketing? Do not spend a single dime. Do not spend any time, attention, money, or effort on anybody that is not your ICP. Done and done. Like you want ROI, you go straight back to those buyer personas, you document them, and they become decision-making criteria for every person in the organization, not just marketing. Every single person in the organization should be focused on buyer personas.
You know, that's really, I love that you said that because for me, I think that we need to put ourselves in a position to where we're the ones saying, this isn't right for you.
Yes. Yes. And do you know how much we've actually gotten to be a part of a couple of companies that really revolutionized their culture because they dove deep into this tell the truth early and often type of paradigm around their buyer personas? Do you know how much more effective their salespeople got when they were allowed, when they were actively given permission to walk away from deals if it was not the right fit for the company or for the buyer? I mean, it's a game changer. Like that's significant. It's like inside of your own individual person. You want to talk about employee engagement? That is an engaged employee because they are believed and trusted to be amazing stewards and advocates for their buyers and for your company. Gives me goosebumps, I swear.
Effective marketing plans made easy.
Marketing plans as huge tomes that collect dust, like the marketing plan templates that are out there on Google collecting SEO, they make me want to vomit. Marketing plans should be highly actionable, living documents that then turn into execution plans that are constrained appropriately by what are the humans? What are the human resources we have to execute this? What is the money that we have to execute this? And is it aligned with the strategic priorities? Do we have a budget that can confidently show we're spending in alignment with where our major opportunities and problems are? The marketing plans of yesterday are total dog poop. They drive me so crazy. I'm like, if there is not actionable intel where you can look at your marketing plan weekly and you can report on it monthly and you can strategically align up or down in the organization around your marketing plan, it means you do not have a marketing plan.
Messaging.
It's not about you. Your audience is going to get so tired of me hearing this, but specifically messaging choreography. In business to business, messaging is not a single differentiator. It is definitely not a tagline. It is not a value proposition. It is a method of distribution that creates progress for people and meets people, behavioral economics, meets them where they are in a way in which they incorporate information. So you have got to align with the psychology of decision-making. And we now have 20 years ever since the Nobel Prize in Economics was awarded to a psychologist. We have 20 years of information about how the brain processes complex information. Our messaging should be aligned with that wealth of insight now. And that is servant leadership. Like, I love the idea that messaging actually allows us to be authentic and human with people, and it speeds up sales cycles.
Most definitely. And I think this leads into your next one, buying psychology and branding.
Yeah. So I think branding, again, everybody's going to get tired of this. It's not about you. But I think branding is misunderstood around when to drive it and why to drive it. The valuation of a company, like the true value that it can hold and its ability to transfer past the current ownership, past the current team, even, you know, even short term. That's really, really important. And marketing is cut out of that. There are so many B2B companies that are constantly searching for their rock star, superstar salesperson. No, because the second they get post, which is going to happen in less than 24 months, there goes all of that investment. So from a branding perspective, there needs to be some deep conversation about what it actually is. It's the truth of your organization. But how does your brand hold value and increase value from a big picture perspective? Because your brand should be creating sustainable and predictable pipeline for you. It should be the reason that you know confidently your projections for 2024, 2025 are solid, because you really do understand pipeline and the impact of brand into the future and its impact on real sales cycles and real research cycles. So
So with what you just said, though, here's oftentimes the pitfall is, and you even hear from salespeople, well, our brand isn't recognized, I can't sell anything. But here's the thing, when you start talking about brand, your brand doesn't matter until it matters. And we need to be able to provide an experience before our brand. So it's experience before brand.
Yes.
And you should be able to sell to your customer, your ideal customer profile, without your colors, without your JPEG.
I mean, yes.
It should not matter.
Yes.
And also, too, when you start talking about case studies, well, the reason we do case studies is because how else am I going to get in this magic quadrant thing, right?
Yeah.
Somebody has suckered you into doing that.
Yes.
And so if you think about case studies, yes, they're important, but they're important when they're important, which is towards the end of the
toward the end.
Process.
Thank you. Towards the end. Case studies and brand closes deals. And the reason it does is because it removes fear. The best does not always win. The best at removing fear always wins. That's why beautiful, well-organized proposals almost always win. That's why nobody got fired for hiring IBM or for hiring Xerox, because it's not scary. Brand happens in selling. And once they're already in your ecosystem, no curiosity is piqued because of a pretty word or a pretty picture that is not relevant to that person, ever.
Most definitely. Man, awesome conversation. Dacia.
So fun.
Yes. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
They can find us at themarketingblender.com. I am very active on LinkedIn. So lots and lots of videos. I do a live stream and I have a podcast called Corporate Caffeine. My name, Dacia, is pretty easy to Google. So Dacia Coffee, C-O-F-F-E-Y. And so, yeah. And then they can also reach me just through my email, dacia@themarketingblender.com. I'm a real person. I am super passionate about creating prosperity for all and expanding the pie and really helping people find joy and significance in their work. And so I love these conversations because I think capital M marketing is what it's all about. It's about building connections for real people inside of complicated environments. It's very rewarding.
Dacia Coffee, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Onward and upward.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.